I'll be reading from Job chapter 28. Job chapter 28. Surely there is a mine of silver and a place where they refine gold. Iron is taken from dust and copper is smelted from rock. Man puts an end to the darkness, and to the furthest limit he searches out the rock and the gloom and deep shadow. He sinks a shaft far from habitation, forgotten by the foot, and they hang and swing to and fro from men. The earth, from it comes food, and underneath it is turned up as fire. Its rocks are the source of sapphires, and its dust contains gold. The path no bird or prey knows, nor has the falcon's eye caught sight of it. The proud beast have not trodden it, nor has the fierce lion passed over it. He puts his hand on the flint, and he overturns the mountains at the base. He hews out channels through the rocks, and his eyes see anything precious. He dams up the streams from flowing, and what is hidden he brings out to the light. But where can wisdom be found? And where is the place of understanding? Man does not know its value, nor is it found in the land of the living. The deep says, "It is not in me," and the sea says, "It is not with me." Pure gold cannot be given in exchange for it, nor can silver be weighed in it as its price. It cannot be valued in the gold of Ophir, in precious onyx or sapphire. Gold or glass cannot equal it, nor can it be exchanged for an article of fine gold. Coral and crystal are not to be mentioned, and the acquisition of wisdom is above that of pearls. The topaz of Ethiopia cannot equal it, nor can it be valued in pure gold. Where then does wisdom come from, and where is the place of understanding? Thus it is hidden from the eyes of all living and concealed from the birds of the sky. Adonai and death say, with our ears we have heard a report of it. God understands its way, and he knows its place, for he looks to the ends of the earth and sees everything under the heavens. When he imparted weight to the wind and metered out the water by measure, when he set a limit for the rain and a course for the thunderbolt, then he saw it and declared it. He established it and also searched it out. And to man he said, "Behold, the fear of the Lord, that is wisdom, and to depart from evil is understanding." Job 28.
What a great chapter. Thank you for being here. This is a great chapter, and we can't do it justice in the short time that we have. Lord willing, on Tuesday night at 7, we want to say some more things about Job 27. So, Job 28. So, if you want to be a part of that at 7 o'clock, we'd love to have you. We're going to divide this up into three easy parts. The first part is a part that shows us man's brilliance, man's bravery, man's persistence, and man's ingenuity. This is the most detailed description of mining in the Bible. Mining is referenced a few times, but here it is dealt with extensively. And mining is something that goes back to a few thousand years before Christ. And it is an amazing thing that man was able to perceive that in the ground there was gold, there was silver, there was copper, there was iron. Figure out ways to get it, figure out ways to refine it, to make it useful. That is truly an incredible feat. And these are the four items he mentions, silver, gold, iron, and copper in this text. But I want you to know, I want you to notice some things. As Phil read, let's focus on some of these verses from 28 to see how truly man demonstrates all of this in his work of mining. In verse 3, he, to the farthest limit, he searches out the rock in gloom and deep shadow. Now, those two words for gloom and deep shadow were used of Sheol. In Job 10, verses 21 and 22, man is going to the darkest of regions. He is searching the limits to find these materials. In verse 4, he sinks a shaft far from habitation, far from where men dwell, forgotten by foot. They hang and swing to and fro, far from men. Often this work was done by men hanging on ropes. And if the rope broke, or if they slipped out of the rope, it went death, plummeting to death, hundreds of feet below, often prisoners and slaves were forced to do these tasks. But it does take some bravery to draw these materials from the earth. And from the earth which gives us food, Psalm 104 celebrates that among others. The earth gives us food, but underneath, there's a whole world of valuable materials there and precious gems that are found and brought forth. And in verse 7, there's no bird as intense, as great as their eyesight may be, and as much as they can pick out the smallest things. Birds don't see this. They don't see this side of our planet. And as bold and strong as the lion is, it doesn't tread this path. It's only man who goes deep below the earth to bring forth these types of precious metals and gems. And it uses some striking language. It speaks of man overturning the mountains. Now, let me tell you why that language is particularly striking. Several terms that are used here. The term that is used for man searching out in verse 3 will be applied to God searching in verse 27. When man overturns mountains at their base or at their roots, in 28, in verse 9, the same thing is said of God. In 9, verse 5, he overturns them in his anger. Speaking of the mountains, man is overturning mountains, and when man gets below the surface of the earth, his eye is seeing every precious thing. In verse 24, that kind of language will be used of God. And then you see that man brings hidden things to light. In verse 11, that same language is used of God in 12 and verse 22. First of all, we should not be guilty of chronological snobbery. as a phrase that C.S. Lewis used for the sense that we think those people in ancient times, they just weren't nearly as smart as we were. Well, first of all, we don't know to this day how the pyramids were built. It took some know-how to do that. And lest we think how brilliant we are, if the whole world was dependent upon me for electricity, it would be in darkness. And that probably applies to you as well. So those people did some brilliant things. But today, if we were writing Job 28, and we were talking about the brilliance of man's accomplishments, if God was speaking to us in our day and time through Job and using examples of things that show human know-how, we probably wouldn't use the example of mining, even though this truly is still something that just demonstrates man's persistence, man's bravery, and man's brilliance. But the thing that I generally heard here mentioned, one of the things that John mentioned in that moment, in this list a moment ago, is men landing on the moon. When the spaceship, and that's probably not a correct term, when they landed on the moon in July 20th, 1969, America gave other nations an opportunity to write something to be read for anyone who would find it. Listen to these. Sometimes I may give the nation, sometimes I may not. Argentina. The efforts and the risk of this extraordinary scientific enterprise demands open, unlimited possibilities for the creative ability of the human spirit. From the Congo, this shows us the achievements of human genius in the conquest of space, in order to make man its master. The president of Ecuador, the astronauts are dominating the laws of outer space and consecrating the grandeur of human understanding and goodwill. Now, that can be multiplied. And if you want to multiply those kind of descriptions, then you can read them online. But you see that they are celebrating human achievement, human accomplishments, and certainly all of these things that we have said of man are demonstrated in this passage. But these things can lead us to pride. They can lead us to think too highly of ourselves. They can lead us to think that we are really something. In Genesis chapter 11, man was trying to build a city and to build a tower that reaches to heaven to make a name for themselves. The Bible tells us the Lord came down to see the tower. It's as if the Lord has to come down from heaven and to strain his eyes to look at this insignificant tower that man is building. That man is building, thinking, let us make a tower that reaches to heaven to make a name for themselves. But the text is emphasizing by its wording how small and insignificant man's activities are While we can see these things that demonstrate noble qualities in man, at the same time, we must be hit with humility. Do you think God is really impressed when we make it to the moon, which He created? But what is amazing to me, in the background of this picture of man's brilliance and bravery displayed in mining, man's inability to find something that is of infinite more value. That question, which John kept asking, where can wisdom be found and where is the place of understanding, is one of the key points of Job 28. You notice that the same question asked in verse 12 is also asked in verse 20. Where then does wisdom come from, and where is the place of understanding? In verse 1, there is a mine for silver and a place where they refine gold. That wasn't easy to find, but man found it. Man found that place. But in verse 12 and in verse 20, where is the place? Where is the place for wisdom? Man's ability to accomplish great things makes this lack of ability to perceive wisdom even more striking. Now, some of this is not a rebuke. Some of this is written to tell us that the sources that we might look to for wisdom are not able to provide it. For example, in verses 13 and 14, man doesn't know its value, nor is it found in the land of the living. The deep says, it is not in me. And the sea says, it is not with me. Just as verse 20 largely repeats what is in verse 12, verses 21 and 22 will largely repeat what is in verses 13 and 14. But you could scale the top of Mount Everest, or you could plunge to the depths of the ocean, to the limits to which men can go, and you don't find wisdom. You don't find it in the heights. You don't find it in the depths. You don't find it in the land of the living, nor in Abaddon in death, where the dead dwell. These things don't provide the answers. And yet, the list of items in verses 15 through 19, though difficult to translate, because some of these words are only used once, but these precious jewels don't compare with the value of wisdom. Man can exercise brilliance and bravery in extracting these metals, in extracting these, refining them, using them, but we can't find something infinitely more valuable. That is wisdom. If we had pure gold and silver and the gold of Ophir and the most precious of stones, we couldn't give these in exchange for wisdom. Wisdom is more valuable than that. That's why Proverbs 23, verse 23 says, buy the truth and do not sell it. Now, I think the main thing this text is telling us, it's telling us these things aren't the source of wisdom. What is the source of wisdom? I was in a conversation not very long ago, very likable person. It was a one-time encounter. Very likable person, but in a backward way, this kind of came up as the discussion. Where can wisdom be found? Where can understanding be found? And he said, I'll tell you, most people around here just don't know this because they haven't traveled like I have. And if they had traveled to this part of the world and that part of the world, they would see all these things. Is that where wisdom is found? His wisdom is found in all these cultures and investigating them and surveying them and looking at them. Is wisdom found within us? Is wisdom found within everybody else? Is wisdom found, as we said earlier, in the highest height or the deepest depth? No. That's not going to give you the answer to this question. It's not going to answer, where then does wisdom come from? And where is the place of understanding? Now, as I stated, some of this is just telling us where to look for this wisdom. And we know where to look sometimes by where we can't look. What can't provide an answer? But is there, to some degree, an implied rebuke that we can focus our eyes and our hearts on gold and silver, on copper and iron, and we can risk life and limb to extract them, but we can't find something much more valuable? Is it a rebuke of our priorities? It's hard to see that some of that is not there. But at the same time, this passage doesn't leave us with no answer. In verse 23, God understands its way, and he knows its place. Now, before I pointed out some verses that use that word place, in verse 1, there is a place where they refine gold. In verse 12, it's a question. Where is the place of understanding? In verse 20, where is the place of understanding? We are left with no answers. But verse 23, God understands its way and he knows its place. God knows the place of wisdom. God knows the place of wisdom. In verse 24, he looks to the ends of the earth and sees everything under the heavens. There's nothing limited from God's view. In verse 7, the vision of the bird of prey is contrasted with what man sees underneath the earth. But here, the vision of the bird of prey is contrasted with God instantaneously seeing and knowing everything. He knows all. He sees all. And even the most untamable parts of creation, the wind and the waters, the rain and the thunderbolt, are carefully weighed and measured by God. He weighs them out. He balances them. And then he investigates what he made in verse 27. He saw it, declared it, established it, and searched it out. One writer said that God is like a jeweler with a magnifying glass, examining wisdom, proclaiming it good. Highly anthropomorphic expression, speaking of God and human characteristics. But it is a good picture. Well, what is wisdom? Where is wisdom to be found? In verse 28, to man he says, "Behold, the fear of the Lord, that is wisdom. And to depart from evil is understanding." From the first verse of this book, Job has been described as a man who was fearing God and turning away from evil. Job 1:1. And now here, we're reminded, what is wisdom? The fear of the Lord. Don't look inward. Don't look around at everyone else. Look up to Him. God has to be the focus, the center, the orientation of our life for us to be wise. The fear of the Lord, that is wisdom. To be focused upon Him, to be in awe and reverence toward Him. The fear of the Lord, that is wisdom. And there is also a moral component to wisdom. There's a moral component to wisdom. It involves turning away from evil. Wisdom is not just putting the pieces together and making some great achievement that can benefit mankind. Wisdom is morally turning away from the wrong direction. Turning away from the wrong direction and walking toward God. I want you to look at Proverbs 2 with me. Proverbs 2. It may be in Job 28, and it's certainly true in various passages, that wisdom can be used in different ways. I am never claiming, nor does the Bible claim, that wisdom is going to unlock every difficulty we have in reconciling a good God with the confused world that we face. The Bible doesn't claim that, nor am I trying to claim that. But if we want to walk wisely, we can do it. In Proverbs 2, beginning with verse 1, "My son, if you'll receive my words and treasure my commandments within you, make your ear attentive to wisdom." You have to have a listening ear. "Incline your heart to understanding." An ear that listens, a heart that submits. In verse 3, "If you cry for discernment and lift your voice for understanding." By the way, it's fascinating, if you look back to 1:20, those same terms are used for wisdom seeking us. 1:20 and 21, wisdom lifts her voice. Wisdom shouts. But here, if we lift our voice for understanding, if we seek her as silver and search for her as hidden treasures, in verse 5, "Then you will discern the fear of the Lord and discover the knowledge of God. For the Lord gives wisdom, and from His mouth come knowledge and understanding." if you seek wisdom, you will find it. And wisdom is of infinite more value than silver and gold and copper and iron. If you seek it, you will find it. Fear God and turn away from evil. Notice in Proverbs 2 that this wisdom in verse 12 delivers you from the way of evil, from the man who speaks perverse things. It will deliver you from evil men. And in verse 16 of Proverbs 2, it will deliver you from strange women, from the adulteress who flatters with her tongues. Again, the point, we must fear God and turn away from evil. Wisdom will lead us to turn away from that. The pursuit of wisdom is a more honorable pursuit than searching for silver and gold and copper and iron. It is an object more to be desired and longed for. In Christ is the epitome of wisdom. In Colossians chapter 2 in verse 3, and Paul has been writing to the Colossians about some of their thoughts of wisdom and knowledge that they were being confronted with in that culture. And he encourages brethren to a true knowledge of God's mystery, Christ, in whom are hidden all the treasures of wisdom and knowledge. But I will tell you this. For those of us seeking God's wisdom, it's not going to look exactly like what the world is looking for. It's not going to look exactly like that. In 1 Corinthians 1, verse 18, Paul wrote, "For the word of the cross is foolishness to those who are perishing. But to us who are being saved, it is the power of God. For it is written, I will destroy the wisdom of the wise, and the cleverness of the clever I will set aside. Where is the wise man? Where is the scribe? Where is the debater of this age? Has not God made foolish the wisdom of the world? For since in the wisdom of the world through its wisdom did not come to know God, God was well pleased through the foolishness of the message preached to save those who believe." The world's idea of wisdom and God's idea are vastly different. And the text emphasizes that the wisdom of this world is foolishness with God, and God's wisdom is foolishness to the world, the preaching of the cross. But look at verse 22. "For indeed Jews ask for signs, and Greeks seek for wisdom," or search for wisdom. "But we preach Christ crucified, to the Jews a stumbling block, to the Gentiles foolishness. But to those who are called, both Jews and Greeks, Christ, the power of God and the wisdom of God." What God defines as wisdom isn't going to look that way to the world. Job has asked, "Where is the place of wisdom? Where is that place? Calvary is that place." It shows us God's power. God's power to transform people who were dead in sin and make them alive together with Christ. It shows us God's power. It shows us God's wisdom. God's wisdom to change who we are, to direct the course of our lives. Where is the place of wisdom? Fear God and turn away from evil. Fear Him and turn away from evil. Where is the place of wisdom? It is the cross. And this wisdom in Christ is offered to people who are lost in sin, to people who may not have the physical strength to mine precious items from the earth, people who may not have the sophistication and know-how to decipher where it is and to put them in useful places, but people who just understand their lives are broken and they need forgiveness and they need a new direction. And Christ and His cross are the power of God and the wisdom of God. If you believe Jesus died and rose again, if you believe that, we invite you, turn from your sin, repent, turn away from evil, as the passage tells us. Be baptized into Christ for remission of sins as we stand and sing.